What do you see on the horizon for financial markets? From uncertainty to opportunity, PGIM can help you rise to the challenges of today, when disciplined risk management is needed most. With $1.2 trillion in AUM and deep expertise across asset classes, our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Hey there, it's Joe Weisenthal.
And Tracy Alloway.
And we are the co-hosts of the Odd Lots podcast. And we want to tell you about a new podcast here at Bloomberg we're really excited about. Money Stuff, the podcast.
That's right. Friend of the pod, Matt Levine, is teaming up with our other friend and Bloomberg TV host, Katie Greifeld, to bring the Money Stuff newsletter to life. Every Friday, Matt and Katie will dive into all the Wall Street finance and other things that make Matt's newsletter such a hit.
You can listen to Money Stuff, the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How long will interest rates stay low? That's the question the whole world wants to know. How long will interest rates stay low? It seems like if they're going up, they're going pretty slow.
Welcome to Odd Lots. I'm Tracy Alloway, executive editor of Bloomberg Markets.
And I'm Joe Weisenthal, managing editor at Bloomberg Markets.
Joe, you're a country music guy, right?
I am a huge country music fan. That is correct.
Why?
Sorry,
that question sounded a bit judgmental.
No,
but why?
No, it's fair to be judgmental. I don't know. I can't explain it. I like songs with distinct melodies. I like songs with distinct lyrics. I went to college in Texas, and my wife is from Mississippi, so I feel like I have this natural, somehow I became a sort of adopted Southerner, so it just kind of all fit together for me.
So I know you're a fan of country music, and I know you were sad to hear that Merle Haggard, who's a titan of country music, passed away earlier this month.
I was a huge Merle Haggard fan. I went to see him in concert last year. He was definitely one of my favorite musicians. He was the originator, one of the originators of something called the Bakersfield Sound, music that was actually written about agriculture, sort of emanating from agricultural workers in California. And he had, earlier in his career, he had all these really reactionary right-wing posts, right-wing stories, The Fight Inside of Me, Okie from Muskogee, about hating the way the world was changing.
Right.
Those are my go-to karaoke songs.
Unfortunately, so, I know that from personal experience.
So listeners are probably wondering why we're talking about this, right? Like, why are we talking about my love of country music in the intro to the Odd Lots podcast?
I thought to ease your pain and your sadness at Mr. Haggard's passing, we could bring in the financial equivalent of Merle Haggard.
Right. So back in the day during the crisis, there were these music videos that popped up by someone who had the brilliant name Merle Hazard, which of course sounds like Merle Haggard, but also sounds like moral hazard, an economic phenomenon. And he's still kicking around. We used to watch those videos during the crisis. Mm-hmm. The blogs picked them up. Every time there was a new one from Merle Hazard, they would get posted. So in honor of Merle Haggard, we decided to ring up Merle Haggard and see what he's up to.
Exactly. And it's a really good time to be doing it because he actually has a new music video out, and I think it might be one of my favorites so far.
Let's bring him in.
How long will interest rates stay low? That's the question the whole world wants to know. How long will borrowing be free? How long will we be subsidized by savers?
Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do you prefer us to call you John or Merle?
Well, if I'm talking like this, it would be John. And if I'm talking like this, it would be Merle.
That's a good distinction. Yeah. So let's just jump right into it.
Sure.
Let's just start from the beginning. How did you become Merle Haggard?
Well, it was not a rational calculation. When the financial crisis was just starting. I mean, people say it was 2008, but really in 2007, a couple of Bear Stearns hedge funds started to crack that summer. I was talking with a friend, Josh May, who lives in Nashville, but covers central bank policy for a firm in New York. And anyway, we were talking about how, well, this is real estate. It's going to be a slow motion train wreck. It's probably going to wind up as a festival for moral hazard. And if you're a financial person and you live in Nashville, we both started laughing and thought, well, that sounds like the name of a country singer, Merle Haggard. And I was just really taken with that idea. And that evening, I was thinking, you know, I would really love to live in a world in which there were such a figure as Merle Haggard, who would accurately explain financial matters through the medium of country music. And then I thought, well, obviously nobody's going to do this unless I do it. So that was the genesis of it. And it was very quick. You know, that was, I think, a Wednesday. I wrote the first song, you know, Thursday night, Friday night, recorded it Saturday, very crudely in my basement. And we shot a very simple video Sunday, put it on YouTube. And then the next, you know, by Thursday of the next week, it had been picked up online by the New York Times and it just caught on. So
what was the first song?
Well, the first song is actually not up on the web anymore, sadly, because of a copyright issue.
But man.
It's Hedge, H-E-D-G-E. It's it's like Tammy Wynette's song, D-I-V-O-R-C-E, but it...
I love that one.
It spells out the word hedge fund. You know, my H-E-D-G-E-F-U-N-D went bankrupt today. Goldman, S-A-C-H-S, took my funding away, like that.
So. wait, can we back up a little bit? Yeah. So you talked about how you wanted there to be a... You wanted there to be a country musician named Merle Haggard that explained these things in song, and then you realized you had to do it. But what were you doing before then? So were you already... Do you have a songwriting background?
No, well, I'm a money manager, and got my own firm, Shane & Company, here in Nashville, and it's long only, fairly traditional, fairly boring, not nearly as exciting as songs and so forth. And I've been doing that... I mean, my first job on Wall Street was in the 80s, but anyway, if you have to go back to college, I had a pop band in college called the Young Nashvillians, and I wrote for the college humor magazine. So there's some music and some humor back in my 20s, and then pretty much nothing until, I guess, middle age.
Are you a country music fan?
Sort of. I mean, I didn't really grow up listening to country. You know, a lot of the... My dad was a businessman here, and he's from Canada, and my mom's family's from Nashville. My mom, you know, played classical music and jazz, and we didn't really listen to country growing up, although you can't avoid it. You know, if people came in from out of town, we'd take them to the Opry, but I didn't really appreciate it until I was in college, and a friend found out I was from Nashville and didn't know a lot about country music, and this guy was from Connecticut, and he's like, you need to listen to George Jones. And I started listening. I was like, this stuff's pretty good. And yeah, it's ridiculous to live here and not...
Well, having watched a bunch of your videos, I mean, I think you're really good at it, and you have a good ear for it, and you have a good voice, and I'm a really big country music fan, and obviously we had the idea of doing this episode of the podcast after the passing of Merle Haggard.
Yes.
Did you get into his work specifically?
Well, I do like his work. I mean, my name is really more a pun on moral hazard,
right?
Although it's a nice thing that it also brought to mind Merle Travis and Merle Haggard. But yeah, you know, I really do admire his work.
You know, there's a the Merle Haggard song that starts off with where he wishes the U.S. were back at the time when it was a silver-backed currency. So he also, he also did a little bit of econ country music.
Yeah, when a man would still work and still could. Although I heard that he later said some of these songs that were kind of more right of center.
More reactionary.
He thought they came off. I mean, Okie from Muskogee. I think he didn't approve of.
Exactly right. So, like, a lot of his early hits were these sort of right-wing reactionary songs like Okie from Muskogee and Fighting Side of Me and, you know, that one about how the good old days when women cooked and the dollar was still backed by silver. But he did actually later in his career say he didn't really believe those things anymore. He still sang them and he still liked them and the fans still enjoyed them, but he basically disavowed the
message. Makes total sense to me. I'm no moral haggard, but I can understand how you write a song and then you don't anticipate quite how people take it.
Do you have a specific example in mind?
I have one that just made me sound like I'm a total gold bug. it was legal tender dollar bills printed by the Fed. Some folks call it stash or jack money, moolah bread.
Yeah. Well, there's also one of my favorite ones, I think the inflation or deflation one.
Thanks.
Perhaps, I mean, it kind of perhaps sets up a false choice between Japan and Zimbabwe.
Yes.
There might be a middle path. And that's one of my favorite ones, though.
Thank you. My favorite comment on you, you know, the song says, you know, inflation or deflation, tell me if you can, will we become Zimbabwe or will we be
Japan?
That's
just a great line.
And on YouTube, people can leave comments, and several people had sort of debates about that. But my favorite comment was somebody, this was, you know, 7 years ago or something when it came out, and somebody just left the comment, Japan.
Inflation or deflation, tell me if you can, will we become Zimbabwe or will we be Japan?
Some of your songs and music videos are incredibly well produced. Do you have someone helping you, or how exactly do you manage to do this?
Well, the videos, I work with Jim DeMarco and Matt Amy at the local PBS affiliate, Nashville Public Television. They're very talented. And the last, the music, the last one, I worked with Allison Brown, who's was a college classmate of mine and, you know, moved to Nashville and has won Grammy Awards. And so if you team up with somebody like that, it makes it sound a lot better.
Yeah, we were going back and watching them because I remember I watched the videos a lot back in 2009, 2010, like when, you know, during the crisis. And in my memory, for some reason, I just assumed that it was sort of you standing in front of the camera. But then going back and watching these videos and they're like, oh, they were really well-produced, clever music videos that you did.
Well, thanks.
What's your personal favorite?
You know, it's a little bit like picking favorites among kids or something like that, which you just you love them all, and you know, for what they can do or whatever, but for who they are. But I think I usually at any given moment like the last one that I did because it's been trying to address whatever I got wrong on the prior ones. I'm talking about songs, not kids. But the so the last one, How Long Will Interest Rates Stay Low, which is the one Allison Brown plays on. And then she's got two equally awesome bluegrass musicians. And we put a little more effort into the video as well. It's a kind of a hee-haw style video to go with it.
So besides the fame that and the recognition that you've got from YouTube videos and blogs picking up your music, where else has the Merle Haggard character taken you? Have you played events? How has it changed your life?
It's a hobby, right? So
sure.
I put out about one of these a year, and it's a very small amount of my time, a large amount of my fun. I hardly ever do anything live. There's a fair amount of retakes and so forth to make it look like I know what I'm doing on the videos. But I've sung at the American Economic Association convention twice, which is really fun. There's a humor session there that Yoram Bauman runs.
He was a guest on an earlier episode of Odd Lot. So
great.
Now we've had two guests specifically, not from any other aspect of the American Economic Association event, but two now specifically just from the humor section.
Joe Stiglitz.
I don't know what that says about us.
Joe Stiglitz hasn't made it on yet,
no,
but you've already
only the humor section.
Humors. Okay, well, you know, there's truth in humor too. You know, somebody's birthday party I've sung at here in town. So most of it happens virtually, and it's fun to see college professors use it in classrooms, and occasionally they'll write and say the students actually, you know, they're not quoting from the textbook, but they are quoting from your songs. That's sort of gratifying, and probably means more that they didn't study than anything else, but it's still fun. And occasionally these songs will be quoted in academic papers, even in German.
I'm guessing that was maybe the Greek debt crisis one.
Oh, yes, the Greeks gave us Pythagoras and Euclid and Plato and other wondrous stuff. But balance in their national budget, their budget apparently is tough.
What's your process for coming up with new songs? So you wrote that your latest one is this Will Inflate, Will Rates Stay Low Forever. Do they just sort of snap in your head one day and say, let's do this? Or do you sort of say, okay, it's time for a new song?
Yes, that's a good question. And it's interesting to me how people come up with ideas. In my case, what seems to work, I don't sit there and go, it's time to put out a song. Yeah. I don't do that. I wait until some phrase is stuck in my head. It, you know, for example, how long will interest rates stay low? I mean, these songs are all things that have really been bothering me. I present them as humor, but, you know, it's like the masks of comedy and tragedy. Those are two sides of the mm-hmm. same coin. These are all pretty deep problems, actually. I'd say they're so serious that you have to laugh about them. So how long will interest rates stay low? You know, if you're a retiree, you know, that's an issue. If you're a money manager looking for assets with return, that's a problem. So anyway, if I find a phrase or an idea stuck in my head, I go, oh, well, if it's something that's recurring and I'm turning it around, that could work as a song. And then I follow the thread from a phrase like inflation or deflation, or how long will interest rates stay low, or fiscal cliff was another song, or dual mandate.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one, too. And I was watching that one just recently, and I really thought it was actually an excellent framing of the sort of economic debate between the conservatives and the hawks, who are most concerned about inflation, and the more liberals and the wonky types, who are more concerned about keeping adequate demand in the economy. So I actually thought it was a very nice framing for anyone to understand the Fed debate.
It's awfully hard to be a central banker. Rich folks like to see the currency strong, but the average Joe's not overjoyed if he's destitute and unemployed. Seems like every time I choose, I'm choosing wrong. The right says I should tighten up on credit.
And, you know, in the later songs, I've gotten to where the older I get, the less I think I know. And so I raise questions more than try to answer them. It's a dilemma, the dual mandate, and a tension between stable prices and full employment. Those are what the Fed calls the two sides of its dual mandate. And, you know, there's no perfect way to square those.
John, is there something about country music specifically that lends itself to covering these sorts of big financial questions, or could you have gone in any direction musically?
That is another deep question. I like to think that, you know, country music is about loving and losing, and love of making money and fear of losing money seems to map in some sense. I imagine intellectually that any genre could work. You know, Tom Lehrer wrote Gilbert and Sullivan style songs about politics. That's not too different, but
it is a lyrically focused genre. So I mean, it does have the advantage. I mean, you know, you say Tom Lehrer, and that's another good example. But
so
it is
not,
a genre.
We're
that
not going to get jazz songs about the Fed,
right? Probably less. I mean, it is right. a good genre.
That's
for
a good,
clear lyrics.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Here's a kind of a serious question. Does the process of writing one of these songs help you in any way actually clarify and form the debate? So you said, for example, you know, writing the song about the dual mandate really made you think about it. Now you've written a song about the interest rate outlook. Do you often, you know, when we have these debates, sometimes it can be hard to really grapple with the contours, but writing a song about it with the constraints that a song requires, seems to me that it could actually be a helpful process for really sort of isolating the key ideas on either side. Do you find that?
It's true to a degree, but maybe not quite as much as you think. I mean, for one thing, I'll read about a topic a little bit. If I realize there are areas I don't know about, I'll show the lyric to a friend, usually this same friend, Josh May, I mentioned, who helped me come up with the idea, or we came up with it together, really. And he'll point out, you know, well, but in Europe, it's this or that. So it does foster dialogue. Yeah, it helps me refine my thought. I guess I haven't thought that much about it. But, you know, I had one other thought, just to turn back to something that you talked about the sort of dual life. And, well, it's not really a dual life. Again, this is a hobby. But I remember when I was in my 20s and I talked to my mom about, you know, well, I have these interests in, you know, maybe doing investment work, and but I still like music. And she told me about Wallace Stevens, the poet, you know, who was a vice president of the Hartford Insurance Company. That was actually what he did. His poetry was all written, you know, on the side. It's all we remember him for. But and he wasn't, you know, he was a vice president of this big company. It was a fairly serious job. William, I'm not likening myself, but William Carlos Williams, the poet, was the head of pediatrics at a hospital. I'm not at all the first person to do create. And Tom Lehrer, who we talked about, is a math professor. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. He only wrote about 70 songs his whole life. It's just that they're so good.
So, in other words, you know, you can be doing a sort of intense, numbers-focused, professional kind of job, and it's nice to have a creative outlet?
Yeah, yeah. And it's been done before.
So
and done better than I'm doing it.
You have anything kicking around right now? Can you give us any hints?
Do you take requests?
I do take requests. I love getting ideas for topics. So if you have any, I have a couple of financial ideas I'd like to do, but I guess I better not say them out loud.
Well, John, it's been fantastic having you on with us. We really appreciate it, and we love listening to your music.
Yeah, we're big fans, and glad after years after seeing your videos for the first time, glad to finally get a chance to chat.
Thank you so much. It's really nice meeting you guys.
And we'll be looking out for the next one whenever it drops.
For sure.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
As the sun burns at Georgia Beach, one windy morn, a mortgage bond trader sits forlorn in the Hamptons.
In the Hamptons.
So, Tracy, are you a converted country music fan?
You know, I think I'm still a fan of Mr. Merle Haggard. I'm not entirely sure you've convinced me of the entire country music genre.
You know what I think is really funny, that we've now had two people from the humor section of the AEA event and none from the other. We probably should fix that. But I really enjoyed talking to John. You know, I used to be used to write songs, and I could not have a full-time job and write songs at the same time. I just couldn't devote the energy. So I'm really jealous of people who make that work.
I would like to see you write some songs. I think we could do well in maybe creating like a punk rock band that sings about, I don't know, CDSs and collateralized debt
obligations. I just found it so hard to work a full day and then I was just so fried. But no, I loved his attitude towards everything. It just seemed like a really positive guy. Mm-hmm. And his songs are great. And
well, I think as journalists and people who spend their time often trying to make complicated sort of hidden matters more accessible for a wider audience, I really respect the way he's gone about doing it. I think song is a great medium in which to describe sometimes esoteric things like the Fed's dual mandate. And the videos are just a lot of fun.
So should you and I try writing a song about repo sometime to...
It's already been done.
It
you
has?
Promised to put it to music for me.
Oh, you wrote a poem, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
no, it wasn't a poem. It was a ballad.
Oh. All right. We'll work on that for a future episode of Odd Lots. But thank you for joining. I'm Joe Weisenthal, managing editor of Bloomberg Markets. You can follow me on Twitter at The Stalwart.
And I'm Tracy Alloway, executive editor at Bloomberg Markets. I'm on Twitter at Tracy Alloway. Thanks for listening.
Do you want to go double dipping? I said double dipping. We head right up and then back down again. Yes, it's double dipping. As our social fabric's ripping, we'll have double dip recessions now and then.
Hey there, it's Joe Weisenthal.
And Tracy Alloway.
And we are the co-hosts of the Odd Lots podcast. And we want to tell you about a new podcast here at Bloomberg we're really excited about. Money Stuff, the podcast.
That's right. Friend of the pod, Matt Levine, is teaming up with our other friend and Bloomberg TV host, Katie Greifeld, to bring the Money Stuff newsletter to life. Every Friday, Matt and Katie will dive into all the Wall Street finance and other things that make Matt's newsletter such a hit.
You can listen to Money Stuff, the podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.